Let's take our Bibles and turn to Joshua, the 24th chapter, continuing the message that I began on last time because I didn't finish that message. I knew that I would not. I had too much material. And it is the matter of commitment that we're talking about. And last Sunday night, we talked about not just the younger generation, but my generation and now even an older generation in the hesitancy we have to make commitments, even to make small commitments. We might use the word decision or choices. I'm focusing on the word commitment because it carries with it more of a long term. But all of the symptoms of this are prevalent in our society because we just hesitate to make choices. We wonder if we make the choice, are we choosing the right choice? Are we choosing the best? Is this going to be the thing that will be better than the other choices that surround us? And we talked about a lot of reasons why people hesitate to make a commitment or a choice, and certainly today on the long term, but now even on the short term. And you know, I'm the preacher, so I preach on these messages, and they're always running through my mind. I'm always thinking about them. But have you ever, you maybe not experienced this, you preach on something, and then in the middle of the week, after you've preached on it, you find yourself in the same conundrum that you were speaking of on Sunday night. That happened to me this week. I'd preached on the choices, too many choices. And choices cause people to doubt. When there are too many choices, someone's confronted with 1,000 different things, which was not true of former generations because they were limited in choice, and now 1,000 different things. And so we hesitate, and we think and we ponder and we take time and then we wonder and we're in self-doubt. It happened to me this week. We had some people over to the house and we were having hot dogs. I love hot dogs, by the way. We were having hot dogs, but there were three different kinds that had been grilled. Now, they all look similar, but there were three different kinds. I was told there are three different kinds. And so there was a plate with all these hot dogs on it. There were three different kinds. And I stared at them, and I caught myself doing this. That's why I'm confessing my problem. I caught myself doing it. I stared at them, and I wondered which hot dog of the three varieties, which one was the best. Now, of course, there's an easy solution to this. Just take one of each. Amen. Easy solution. I didn't do that. You say, preacher, how did you choose? I caught myself hesitating and staring at the plate while others were waiting, because we're kind of buffet style thing, staring at the plate and wondering which hot dog I should choose. Do you know how I chose? I chose the biggest one. How many say, preacher, I'd have done the same thing? I chose the biggest one. But then, and there was this hesitation, okay? There was this hesitation. I chose that. Then I sat down and noticed that someone sitting to my right had chosen differently from me. And I got to wondering if theirs tasted better than mine. Anyone ever been here? Now, I know that's a silly illustration, but it is a microcosm of what we face today in regard to decision and oftentimes our hesitancy of our lack of commitment. So last time we talked about different things, having too many choices. Self-doubt then comes because of that. We fear we might regret a decision, so we don't make a decision. We fear of losing our independence. That's why a lot of people are putting off marriage or not marrying at all, because they feel like, well, if I make this choice, I've made a commitment, I'm no longer independent. They don't like the idea of a long-term commitment. They fear the obligation that comes with a commitment. Pastor, I don't want to commit to that because I'll be obligated to do something in the future. They resist self-limitation. By its very definition, the word decision comes from a Latin word that means to cut off. That's what it means. In other words, when I've decided for one thing, by virtue of that decision, I have cut off a number of other things. So they resist self-limitation. And one I didn't get to last time, I'll touch on it briefly. They apply a consumer-driven thinking to every aspect of life, consumer-driven. And we're trained this way. Now, my hot dog illustration really gives us a window into this idea because we have so many choices in the small things of life, but we also have choices in the larger things of life, and everything is consumer-driven so that we're thinking about ourselves. It's kind of a self-centered thing. In other words, what will give me the best feeling? What will give me the best result? What will give me the best prosperity? What will make me feel personally fulfilled? Last last week I was recommending, with some caveats, of course, but I was recommending Dr. Kevin DeYoung's book entitled Just Do Something. By the way, young people should read that book. Young people should read that book. Now, there's a little Calvinism in the front part of the book, and he had to put that in because he's a Calvinist, but the whole book then goes against what he was saying. I always think that's funny. Calvinists really struggle with this. Calvinism is not common sense, nor is it Bible, and so they struggle with this a little bit, but just overlook the first chapter and then move on to the rest of it. But the book is entitled Just Do Something. And in that book, he talks about, he's had an interview, he interviewed his grandfather. His grandfather was a godly Christian man who worked his life for decades in his life and just worked at a job that he held for many decades. And in talking to his godly Christian grandfather, he asked him this. He said, his grandfather, he said, Grandpa, he said, did you feel fulfilled in your life's work? Did you feel fulfilled? Now, that is a goal that a lot of people have. Okay, but if I don't feel fulfilled, I'm not going to do it if I don't feel fulfilled. Now, I'm talking about a consumer-driven mentality here, okay? So he said, did you feel fulfilled? And he said his grandpa looked at him kind of funny. Like, what are you talking about? Did I feel fulfilled? And his grandfather thought about it for a minute, a godly Christian man, and he said, you know, I really never felt fulfilled, but I needed to eat. Now, that honestly, that was a very good answer, okay? Because somehow we've given people the idea that they ought to find everything in life should benefit them, including ultimate fulfillment in everything that they do. Someone said to me one time, and a lot of people look at Christian ministry with rose-colored glasses because they've never been in my seat. And so they look at it with rose-colored glasses. They say, Pastor Monty, it must just be wonderfully fulfilling every day to know that you're doing something that counts. And it just, every moment of every day must be a wonderful fulfillment. No. Sometimes it's just work. And do you know what? That's okay. In fact, can I say this? That's a good thing. Sometimes you're working because you're working, listen to what I'm about to say, in spite of how you're feeling. We've taught a whole generation of people that if they're not feeling good about something, they shouldn't do it, and they hesitate to commit to something because of a consumer-driven mentality. They hesitate to commit to something because they may not feel like it later. I won't ask you to raise your hands, but many of you in this room have worked at a job for decades, and I would venture to guess that there were moments in the course of your job when you didn't feel like it. That's just a guess. I would venture to guess. In fact, I know that is true of every one of us. But when we instruct people that, well, your feelings are paramount, that's a consumer-driven mentality, and it goes against making a commitment, because we're afraid to commit, because what if we don't feel like it? Brother East, can I tell you something? I think it's wonderful that you and your family are going to Thailand. I think that's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. And it's exciting, isn't it? Can I tell you, once you get there, there's going to be moments when you don't feel like it. Just keep doing it. Because you made a commitment. Just keep doing it. That's true of everything in life. And when people fail to commit, or they are driven by their feelings rather than by the commitment that they've made, they'll tend to be wishy-washy and back and forth and up and down and in and out. And that is all part of a consumer-driven mentality. Joshua 24, verse 14, the Bible says this, "Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and truth. Put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood." You can't serve God in sincerity if you don't put away the other gods. If you commit to God, if you commit to Jehovah God, you have to put away the other gods. And in the land of Egypt, and serve you the Lord. Verse 15, "If it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve." In other words, make a choice. Just do something. "Choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the flood, that is on the other side of the Jordan River, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house," Joshua said, "we will serve the Lord." Sometimes a consumer-driven mentality holds us back. And then this week when I was thinking about this, I thought of another thing that holds people back today in making a commitment. And this is a serious matter. It is a great fear of the opinions of other people. Now you say, well, wait a minute, Pastor. You know, people have always been peer-driven, never so much as we are today. And I'm not just talking about young people. We are peer-driven and concerned about the opinions of other people and what they think of us, because there has never been a time in history when, for many of us, our lives are more on display than they are now. And you know where that is? That's Facebook, that's Twitter, that's all social media. I'm not against social media, and I'm on Twitter, and if you don't follow me, you should. It's extremely entertaining, by the way, to follow me. I have people who love me, and I have people who hate me. It's a big, big, broad spectrum. But in that, there's a fear, because people post things about their life, people then get this fear of being criticized. And on social media, you criticize someone by giving them the thumbs down. You know what I'm saying? By giving them the thumbs down. And there are some people, and it's not rare, there are some people who really get their feelings hurt when someone gives them negative feedback in regard to social media. And the hurt feelings might cause them to not make any commitment to anything, because if I commit to something, someone will be against it, so I'm better not doing anything. By the way, same thing is true with taking your stand for Christ, okay? You're going to face some level of criticism, some level of censure. And when social media first came out, whenever you met with some kind of opposition or censure or criticism, people got their feelings hurt. They were all upset about it. Do you know what I learned about that? Just ignore it. I learned something. I cannot conduct my life or ministry worrying about the opinions of other people. I've learned that over the course of ministry. I cannot do that. And everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an idea. And if I were worried about all of those ideas, I'd never make a choice, because I'd be so afraid what so-and-so is thinking, what they're going to think, and I'd be thinking it through. And you know, there's never a choice where you have 100% of the people on board. Never a choice. Preacher, what do? I've learned to make a commitment to go for it and to stand by it. Listen to this. And to brush aside criticism. Now, I'll listen to constructive criticism and tweak things. But if I've made a commitment to something, the only way I can accomplish it is to not fear what somebody else thinks. And many people have, today people have so much input into that and so many ideas. There are so many armchair quarterbacks in every way of life. And let me say, you'll never live your life to the fullest until you learn how to make a decision to commit to it and not be fearful of the opinions of other people. But having said that, I want to get into our text a little bit, verse number 14. Because what is it about commitments? What is it about commitments? I think they're vital. I think that the most successful people over a 30-year ministry, my ministry spanning about almost 30 years now as a senior pastor, I think that commitments are vital. Because when I look at successful people, they are people who have committed to one thing and have done it well. Very rarely are successful people jacks of all trades. Now, I know some very, very multi-talented people, but most people, even who are multi-talented, only focus on a couple small areas, and usually they're related areas. So that when somebody commits to something, they're giving themselves wholly to it and fully to it, and that long-term commitment equals success. And an unwillingness to back away when things don't go well, or when I meet with a roadblock or a failure, an unwillingness to back away, not because it's pleasant, not because it's easy, but an unwillingness to back away that is based upon the fact that I've made a commitment, that is a serious ingredient to my success. And so I want to encourage you about that. Let's look at the text for a moment. Verse number 14, Joshua 24. Now therefore, serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth. Notice the word in verse 14, therefore. What is the word therefore? Therefore. It is there because the penman Joshua has given to us, He has given to us here a list of all of the things that God did for Israel. Beginning back at verse number 1, he talks about Joshua gathering together all the tribes of Israel. And then they're going to have this big review of Israel's history. And down through verse number 3, all the way through verse number 11, it talks about how the Lord was with them in the wilderness wandering, how he brought them into ultimately into the land of promise, how he defeated their enemies there. It gives us a catalog, kind of a panoramic view of Israel's history entering the promised land and of God's provision for them as they moved into the promised land. And then based upon God's provision, based upon his perfection, protection, based upon the fact that God has been with them, verse number 14, he says, now therefore, fear the Lord, because the Lord has proven himself. Joshua says, fear the Lord. Commitments, then, are usually obvious. Usually obvious. The obvious choice is to fear the Lord. Why? Because of all the things that he has done for us. Paul put it this way in Romans 12, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Why? It's reasonable because of what Christ has done for us. Really, commitments are not that difficult. The difficulty comes when we cloud it with everything else. When I think of the things the Lord has done for me, I can only come to the logical conclusion of committing myself to him. Commitments are oftentimes very easy. Let me talk about this. God uses to guide us in our lives, God uses our personalities, he uses our talent, he uses those things, listen carefully, that are obvious about us to guide us. Young people especially, listen to me. I think parents, don't do this to your kids. Don't tell your kids this lie. Oh, little Johnny, you can be anything you want to be. Really, he can't. Because God didn't make him that way. Okay? That's such a lie. Okay? And it gives kids this weird idea that they just pick something. And some children are not suited to some things. For instance, I get asked this all the time by people who don't know me. Did you ever play basketball? Did you ever play basketball? Yeah, I did. I put people in the hospital. I have, off a basketball court. I put in an emergency room. Just because I'm tall doesn't mean I have aptitude. How many know it takes more than height? Yeah, it really does. And if based upon, as a young person, if based upon my incredible physical bearing and my fabulous physique, if as a young person, if based upon that, I had made a decision to do something for which I had no aptitude, no matter how hard I tried, I would have failed. Does everybody follow what I'm saying here? So rather than pushing our kids into something for which they have no aptitude, and boy, I'm about to skate on thin ice. I think we've got our kids doing too many things. I just think we do. I mean, find something and commit to it. Find something the child likes. Find something for which the child has an aptitude. And then develop that. Well, Pastor Monty, I want them to be well-rounded. That's kind of like sampling a little bit of everything, but not mastering anything. A moment ago, you heard Bethany play the piano. Wasn't that a beautiful offertory, by the way? Wasn't that beautiful? Do you know what that took? It took two things. It took a God-given gift. She has a God-given gift of music. And it took her commitment to developing that gift. And she's developed it beautifully. In other words, she found that right thing and she committed to it. When she started playing piano with Alice Pugh, and Alice was giving her lessons, I remember Alice would sometimes come and talk to me in church, and she'd say, wow, she'd say, that girl really has a gift. And she wisely developed that aptitude, and now she has that ability that is really a phenomenal ability. She wisely developed that aptitude. I'm suggesting this, that oftentimes our commitments are obvious. They're obvious. They don't go against a natural aptitude. They're often obvious, what we should commit to. I've had young people, Pastor Monty, you know, I'm really in love with so-and-so. Should we get married? Well, is she in love with so-and-so? That's another question. See, it takes two on this. Yes, she is. You know, then what is the fear of commitment when this is so obvious? Can I share this? When I dated a number of girls in college, rarely was I ever turned down for a date. A couple times I was. You say, Pastor Monty, did that bother you? It only bothered me to the extent that I pitied the young lady who said no. I just felt bad for her. I thought, you just don't even know what you're missing. But when Kelly and I started to date, it just became, to me, incredibly obvious because of certain things about background, because of certain things about personality type, because she grew up listening to polka music. Okay, and I love polka music. I love polka music. And I don't care, by the way, who thinks that's bad. I love it. I love polka music. It's happy. It's happy. And there were so many things. And I remember one time when I was talking to my mother about this, I said, well, Mom, how do you know when you're in love? And my mother said this. She said, when you are in love, you don't have to ask that question. When you know, you know. My mother also gave me great advice. She said this, don't marry a girl you could live with. Marry one you couldn't live without. That's really good advice. Okay, so once you know something and it's obvious, the commitment becomes easier. It is only clouded when we're concerned about 1,000 other choices and possibilities. Focus on those things that are obvious. Number two, about commitments. Number two, commitment eliminates other options. In other words, the Bible says this, look at verse 14, put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood. It eliminates other options. When I've made a commitment, then other opportunities are easily declined because they don't fit with the big picture, the big commitment. They just don't fit. By the way, this happens to you as a pastor all the time. There are 1,000 opportunities, and some things don't fit with the picture. Years ago, I had a lady call me when we lived over on East Main Street, and she called me. They'd put in these big power poles down East Main Street, you know, and this is a neighbor across the way. I've never even met her. She called me on the phone. They put in these big power lines. I didn't really notice much about it, but they put them up. She called me on the phone. She said, Pastor, she said, I'm your neighbor across the way. We don't know one another. She said, I know you're pastor of that Baptist church. She said, are your ears ringing? And you know, whenever you pause and stop to think about are your ears ringing or not, it seems like they are. You know, that's true. It does. If you ever think about it, it seems like you can hear them ringing. And I said, well, no, I don't think any more than normal. And she said, well, she said, they probably will be. She said, they put in that big power pole. And she said, ever since they put that big power pole in, she said, my ears are just ringing. She said, I know it's from that power pole. I know that there's power that's seeping into my house. It's coming on through my roof. And I know that then it's just driving me nuts. She said, it's been there ever since the power pole went up. She said, Pastor Monty, do something. Okay. Now I asked her why she would ask me. And she said, because you are a man in this community who gets things done. I wasn't sure what was meant. At that moment, I had an opportunity. I could become, at that moment, the anti-power pole crusader of Hendricks County. Or I could remain a preacher. Guess what I chose to do? I chose to remain a preacher. Why? Because the commitment that I've made to preaching, to serving, to helping people, it trumps other opportunities. Not necessarily a bad thing if somebody wants to do this, but it doesn't fit with my picture. Does everybody hear what I'm saying? When I make a commitment, and by the way, well, Pastor, I don't want to be tied down to some kind of commitment. Oh, you've got it all wrong. You've got it all wrong. Commitment sets you free because commitment enables you to focus on those things that are most vital and to quickly decide something that is not important or is not part of your picture. Does everybody follow what I'm saying here? So I'm free. I know, for example, that I cannot become the spokesman for everybody's great cause because I'm the spokesman for Christ's great cause and the Bible. And when I've made this commitment, all of a sudden it set me free to do the one thing that I'm decent at, to do, maybe not decent, but the one thing that I'm marginal at, to do that one thing, it has set me free to do it, and I don't experience confusion. It's a fantastic way to go. When you make a commitment to something, you obviously are putting away something else that's a good thing because it allows you to have focus in your life. How many people, and I'm not just talking about young people, but they live very scattered, they're pulled every different direction. We got to do this, we got to do that. Oh, Pastor Ronnie, we did so much today, I don't even know what we did. Who wants to live that way? But to live with a sense of focus. Commitment eliminates other options. Commitment sets a sure direction. Look at verse 14. And serve the Lord. And serve the Lord. Do you know what commitment does in setting a sure direction? It makes decisions for me. I know where I'm going. Sometimes a young person will come to me and want to be in Christian ministry and feel called to Christian ministry, and they'll ask about, well, how does this happen? And here's something I always tell them. I always tell them, always head toward the ministry. Well, Richard, what does that mean? Every decision I make is a decision heading toward the ministry, not a decision heading away from the ministry. I remember working one time as a security guard for a company called Hannon Security in Minneapolis, a private security firm. I worked as a security guard. There was an older man who'd worked there for a lot of years, and I just worked there over the summertime. And I remember we were working together one night, and just you said, "Preacher, what did you do?" Well, you just had to sit there. I was a security guard. You had to sit there in a building at night and listen for strange noises. I remember this old security guard, he trained me in something. Let's see how I could illustrate it over here. The camera needs to follow me over here. He trained me in this. When you're in a building you're unfamiliar with, he said you need to know the building so that you can tell if an intruder has come into the building. He said you need to know the building. He said you need to feel the building. And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Watch." He said, "We're going to do this." We walked over to a wall. And he said, "Stand up against the wall. Spread your arms like this. Put your head back." Now, I'm serious. I did this. And by the way, he wasn't joking. He was serious. He said, "Now, once you get your head back and you're all against the wall, feel the building." And then he said this. He said, "Close your eyes and listen." And I closed my eyes and listened. And I was hoping he'd say, "Open your eyes," but it was like a long time. It was like 3 minutes. And this is a hard pose to hold for 3 minutes. And I was doing like this, and he said, "Now," he said, "listen to the building noise." He said, "Fans turning on and off." He said, "Different things." He said, "Become accustomed to the sounds of that building so that when you hear a sound that doesn't belong, you know something's amiss." Well, that's an interesting idea, isn't it? It's an interesting idea. So I did that. He said, "Preacher, what did the job entail?" Sitting there, waiting for the building to make a sound that did not belong. I did that for one summer. At the end of the summer, I was going back to Bible college, and the old man was a little disappointed. He said, "Man," he said, "maybe," he said, "you should consider a career in this instead of Bible college." He said, "You are really, really good at this." Sitting and listening to the building. I'm really good at that. Okay, just another one of my multi-talents. But I easily said no to that because I had a sure direction. I knew where I was headed. I knew where I was headed. Why? Why did I know? Because I'd made a commitment. Does everybody, do you follow this? See, a commitment, everybody's so, "Oh, I'm not going to commit. I'm not going to commit. I want to leave all my options open." Yeah, so that you end up in life doing absolutely nothing. "I want to leave all my options open." So you end up in delaying important decisions of life, and you delay, and you wait, and finally some of those opportunities that you had right in the palm of your hand, they disappear because you delayed, because you're afraid. You're afraid of commitment. Don't fear it, or life will pass you by. It will pass you by. Quickly, another thought about commitment, the last one. Commitment is better than indecision. Now look at verse 15, because there's something weird about verse 15. Look at verse 15. Joshua gives him an opportunity, "And if it seem evil unto you to choose the Lord." If after all God's done for you, you still don't want to choose him. "If it seem evil unto you to choose the Lord," notice these weird words, "choose you this day whom you will serve." Make a choice. "Whether the gods your father served on the other side of the flood, gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." How do I say this? I almost think it's better to make a commitment, even if you make a wrong commitment, than to do nothing at all. I mean, that's just, I'm just being honest. Oh, well, yeah. Pastor, we want to make the right choice. We all want to make the right choice. But how many in this room have made wrong choices before? I have. And do you know what? They eventually lead me to a right choice. But if I never made the wrong choice, I might never be led to the right choice. And if I just sat there doing nothing, hoping to get zapped or waiting until my liver quivered before I would make a decision, then all of a sudden I'm in a state of indecision, I'm doing absolutely nothing. I think it's interesting advice that he gives. Choose. Make a choice. Don't be on the fence. Get off of middle ground. Just do something. I can almost hear that frustration in his voice, but there's a truth. I'd 10,000 times rather have someone with a passion for a direction. Of course, it should be a right direction. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But I'd 10,000 times rather see someone with a passion for a direction than somebody who is absolutely directionless because they're stymied over the issue of making a commitment. Now here's the end. When you make long-term commitments and stick with them when you don't feel like it, and work when you're not fulfilled, and stay by your marriage because you made vows before God, which is a long-term commitment, and you stay in a job opportunity because this is the thing that you've been doing, this is the thing that you're called to do, this is the thing that you sensed at one point, this is what I'm going to do, and you don't switch every 2 years. When you make those kind of commitments, it doesn't, well, Pastor, that limits my opportunities and I might miss out on something in life. No, what you gain is the richest part of life, because a long-term commitment means long-term relationships. What you gain is the best part of life because you gain stability. What you gain, well, Pastor Monty, I want to make sure I feel fulfilled, so I'm going to jump around until I feel fulfilled. Okay, no. What you gain by a long-term commitment is a genuine sense of belonging. And I'll finish the thought with this. The average tenure of a pastor in a church is 2 to 4 years. They stay 2 to 4 years. You can't even know the roads in a community in 2 to 4 years. And I say this, they are missing the best part of life, because the best part of life isn't when people throw you a big party and say, welcome to our church. The best part of life is for a pastor when you've been in that church long enough so that you are family. The best part of life is when you are a fixture in the community. I think I'm a fixture in the community, that crazy light bulb fixture. The best part of life is when you have a sense that this is where you belong. These are my people. This is my family. These are the people that I love through the ups and downs. These are the people that I've committed myself to. In a job, it's the same thing, same as ministry. In a job, in life, in marriage, it's the same thing. You know what? My mom's generation, you've heard this, they called it, we're going to put down roots now. Or roots. We're going to put down some roots now. We're going to get planted somewhere. And you know what they did, that generation that did that? They built the greatest nation on the face of the earth, America, post-wartime America. They built great families and great homes. They built great companies and great businesses. That generation built great churches, and they built great lives, because rather than flipping from one thing to the other, floating around kind of randomly, they made relationships that counted into the decades. I'm just suggesting, without commitment, we're really missing something. Let's consider it. Choose you this day. Father, we love you, and thank you for so much practical application in the Bible tonight. Help us, Lord, to see the value of what we've discussed, and help us, Lord, to learn to make commitments for the long haul, understanding, Lord, that the limitation that a commitment naturally brings is a good thing, because it really sets us free. Father, give us wisdom, those of us who are older, who are now facing more challenges in this area than we ever have in our lifetimes, and those of us who are younger, who have grown up in an age where a lack of commitment has become the norm. Father, challenge us to see that there is a better way, that there is the Bible way. Bless these thoughts, we pray in Jesus' name. Let's all